Today's gospel reading is Mark 10, verse 32 through 45. They, this is Jesus' followers, were now on the way up to Jerusalem, and Jesus was walking ahead of them. The disciples were filled with awe, and the people following behind were overwhelmed with fear. Taking the 12 disciples aside, Jesus once more began to describe everything that was about to happen to him. "Listen," he said, "we're going up to Jerusalem, where the Son of Man will be betrayed to the leading priests and the teachers of religious law. They will sentence him to die and hand him over to the Romans. They will mock him, spit on him, flog him with a whip, and kill him. But after 3 days, he will rise again." Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came over and spoke to him. "Teacher," they said, "we want you to do us a favor." "What is your request?" he asked. They replied, "When you sit on your glorious throne, we want to sit in places of honor next to you, one on your right and the other on your left." But Jesus said to them, "You don't know what you are asking. Are you able to drink from the bitter cup of suffering I am about to drink? Are you able to be baptized with the baptism of suffering I must be baptized with?" "Oh, yes," they replied, "we are able." Then Jesus told them, "You will indeed drink from my bitter cup and be baptized with my baptism of suffering. But I have no right to say who will sit on my right or on my left. God has prepared those places for the ones he has chosen." When the 10 other disciples heard what James and John had asked, they were indignant. So Jesus called them together and said, "You know that the rulers in this world lord it over their people, and officials flaunt their authority over those under them. But among you, it is not so. Whoever wants to be a leader among you, you must be their servant. And whoever wants to be first among you, you must be the slave of everyone else. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve others and to give his life as a ransom for many."
Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. We know this. We know it in all kinds of ways, from presidents and prime ministers and kings who use their power to take care of the people who can take care of them, to parents who might hypothetically tell those children no dessert tonight so that they can have all the ice cream to themselves once the kids are in bed. I've heard that there might be parents like that somewhere. Power corrupts. This is true everywhere. It's even true in the church. You know, stories of pastors corrupted by their power, embezzling funds that other people have generously given, using their power to sexually manipulate people in the congregation. They're hardly even scandalous anymore. We've heard so many of them. Power corrupts. And we know this, and we've known it for a long time. Many of you have heard that saying many times, and it dates back at least to a 19th century nobleman named Lord Acton. It's been around at least 150 years. So we know this is coming, right? We know that power corrupts, and we should be ready for it. We should be able to prepare, but power still corrupts. We can't seem to stop it. And it seems unstoppable in our lives because as we are led, so we lead. Because as we are led, so we lead. And so even a person who knows acutely and tragically that power corrupts can't stop its corrupting influence. The hardest example of this that I know is of children who have been abused, who know that power corrupts, and still are far more likely, if they have children of their own, to abuse those children. Because as they have been led, so they lead. And that's not just true in tragic circumstances. It's true in trivial circumstances as well. You know, I helped teach algebra to kids who were struggling for years, and I only knew how to teach it the way I had been taught. And if, I don't know if you know this, but in the last 10 years, they changed the way you're supposed to do algebra. I didn't know you could change algebra. But as I was led, I could lead. That's the way this works. As we are led, so we lead in things great and in things small. And what we see in this text this morning are two radically different visions of what leadership should be, two radically different uses of power. We see the leadership and the use of power of the world, and we see the leadership and the use of power of Jesus. And in both cases, we see that as we are led, so we lead. So we have only 2 points this morning. As we are led by the world, so we lead. And as we are led by Jesus, so we lead. 2 points for two kinds of leadership. And in each kind, in each way, as we are led, so we lead. So the first point is, as we are led by the world, so we lead. And the world's way of leading is to use power to get things. The world's way of leading is to use power to get things. And you can think of, you know, the presidents or the parents or the pastors that I mentioned earlier. This is what power is for. I mean, so like the most literal example is what we call purchasing power. Right? Purchasing power is for getting things. That's what you do with power. That's how we lead. And what we see in this really tone-deaf episode with James and John is them just leading as they have been led. They were taught you use power to get things, and that's what they're trying to do. And they're not very good at it, but they're so focused on power is for getting. Not one word for getting, for getting. That they practice the ancient spiritual discipline of selective listening on what Jesus tells them. So the passage starts, and Jesus says, the Son of Man is going up to Jerusalem, and there he must suffer. And he goes into rather vivid and painful detail about what that's going to be like. But James and John, they stopped listening after the Son of Man is going up to Jerusalem. Because they know what that means. They know that the Son of Man refers to a prophecy in Daniel chapter 7 about the king to end all kings. The great king who will rule forever and ever, and his dominion will be an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom will have no end. And they hear Jesus saying, I'm that guy, and I'm going up to Jerusalem, which was the seat of the ancient kings of old. And they just start throwing a party in their brains. And they don't hear anything after that of what Jesus has said. Because power is for getting, and we're about to get an awful lot. For them, this is this moment, they hear that and they think, I mean, they didn't think of this because the Lord of the Rings hadn't been written yet, but this is Aragorn coming back to Gondor, right? Or this is King Richard the Lionheart coming back to England at the end of Robin Hood. This is like if tomorrow night Abraham Lincoln came back from the dead and walked out onto the debate stage. Right? And you got to walk with him. And so they're doing what everybody does. They're angling for good spots in the new administration. They want important and prestigious and powerful jobs in the new kingdom they want to get. And they come across sounding like idiots. And it's easy to laugh at them. It's easy to do as Jesus did and just shake your head. You guys have no idea what you're asking me for. The places on my right hand and my left hand will be filled by two brigands tacked up on crosses next to me. You have no idea what you're asking. And we can shake our heads at James and John, but we are James and John. Now, maybe you, like me, have no interest in that kind of massive political power that they're envisioning. I do not want to be chief of staff in the White House. I've seen the before and after pictures. I suspect you don't want to be either, but we all want some kind of power. Because as we have been led by the world, so we seek to lead. We seek to get power and use it to get other things. And it may be a much smaller and simpler power. It may just be the power to get one person to do one thing differently. It may just be the power to get your husband to put the toilet seat down, to get your kid to pick up their socks off the floor and put them in the laundry basket. It might just be the power to have everybody leave you alone and stop telling you what to do. But we are all James and John. We all have been led by the world and so seek to lead in the same way, to get power and use it to get whatever else it is we want. The world's way of leading is by using power to get. And it really doesn't matter what you're getting. The world's way of using power is for getting. And this leads to abuse, and it leads to distrust. We have learned not to trust people in power. And rightfully so, because they abuse their power. Power corrupts. They use it to get things. And a lot of times those things come from us if we're not the people in power. This way of leading always creates abuse and mistrust. It creates certainly abuse and mistrust between the powerful and the powerless. Jesus acknowledges that. That's what verse 42 is. All right, this is, "And Jesus called them and said to them, 'You know that those who are considered rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them.'" This is a picture of the powerful opposing the powerless, dominating and abusing. And the powerless cannot help but resent and mistrust the powerful in this case. Now, it's often that we rightly distrust the powerful because they don't deserve to be trusted. But I would argue that even when the powerful ought to be trusted, in this mentality, it's impossible to trust them. My first job out of college, I was a carpenter's helper. And I graduated in 2007 as the housing market was collapsing. So I signed on, and there were a couple of houses lined up to build, and we built those houses, and then there was just nothing to do. But my boss, who was already in his 60s, already plenty well off enough to retire, wanted to keep us employed. And so he spent hours and hours and hours going everywhere he could, finding little odd jobs for us to do and taking a loss on all of them. Right? This is a person with power over me that's really trustworthy. And the whole time, we would say, "Man, it's great that we have this work. I can't believe that Robin is not out here working with us. He just gets to sit in his office all day and not do anything. We're the ones who do all the real work." It's absurd, but in this mentality, we cannot help but resent and distrust the powerful, whether they earn our distrust and resentment or not. Now, we know this. Culturally, we know this, that when some people are up here and some people are down here, the people up here inevitably end up stomping on the people down here. And so our solution has been to try and flatten things out. Get rid of as many power structures as possible and get everybody on the same ground, equal footing, starting in the same place. And let's just, for the sake of argument, assume that it's actually possible to achieve that noble goal and get everybody on equal footing, starting in the same place. Even if we did that, this mentality, this way of leading would still ruin us, would still lead to abuse and mistrust. See, before Jesus talks about the rivalries, the abuse and the mistrust between the powerful and the powerless, we get a picture of resentment and rivalry and distrust amongst absolute equals in verse 41. So James and John have just, they've tried to get the spots at the left and the right hand of the great king. And there's 10 other disciples, right? And when the 10 heard it, they began to be indignant at James and John. And it's clear in the context of Mark that they're not indignant because they can't believe that anybody would ever do this. They're indignant that James and John got a little bit ahead of them in the rat race that they're all running. They have the same goals as James and John. They're just annoyed that they're losing. Even when we start out as equals, this mentality, this using power in order to get, turns us into rivals, turns us into enemies. We'll roll with the chairs thing. Everybody here's play the children's game, musical chairs. In this mentality, life is a high-stakes game of musical chairs. And everyone around you has the potential to get the promotion that you wanted to get. To get the girl or the boy that you wanted to get. To get the house or the life or the perfect children that you wanted to get. As long as power is about getting, it doesn't matter if we start on equal footing. It will ruin us. If we lead as we are led by the world, we end up with nothing but disruption and distrust and discontent. And don't kid yourself, I know what we'll do. We'll just put out 10 more thrones. And then there's a seat for everybody at the table. There's no such thing as enough. We believe that there is. Every night from 8 to 8:30 p.m., I believe that if I just had the power to enforce silence and sleep on my four wonderful and noisy children, then I would be okay. That would be enough power. But how stupid am I to actually believe that that would be enough? Because there's always something else. Then I would want the power to enforce eating vegetables without complaint. And if I got that, then I would want the power to enforce you do your chores the first time you're asked exactly the way you're supposed to do them. And I don't know what I would want after that. I don't have that much imagination, but you better believe there would be something else. This is a bottomless pit. This way of leading, this way of using power will destroy us. And we are right to distrust it. And the answer is not getting rid of power structures, flattening everything out. That may be a good goal, but it won't help. It won't get us where we want to be. The answer is a completely different way of being led. Completely different vision of what power is for. And this is where Jesus comes into the picture. Because Jesus doesn't lead the way the world leads. Jesus doesn't use power as a way of getting what he wants. Jesus uses power as a way of giving himself. Jesus uses power as a way of giving himself. And as Christians, it is possible to, as we are led by Jesus, lead the same way. So Jesus uses power as a way of giving himself. Jesus isn't backing away from power. He begins and ends our passage by calling himself the Son of Man, which is the person who has it all. It's not so much that Jesus is powerful as that Jesus is power incarnate. It's not so much that Jesus has authority as that he is the source of all legitimate authority. He is the king to end all kings. And instead of using that to get what he wants, instead of using that to get anything at all, he gives himself up. He gives up his life. He gives up his throne. For Jesus, power is a way to give himself. So we see in the passage that Jesus suffers to serve. Right? There are three predictions that Jesus makes of his death in these chapters, in chapters 8, 9, and 10. And this one, in verses 33 and 34, is the most vivid when it comes to the suffering. It goes into the most detail. So if you look at verse 34, "And they will mock him and spit on him and flog him and kill him." Jesus is really trying to get this point across, that I came to suffer. And then when James and John, you know, who put their earbuds in for that part of the speech, take him out and say, "Hey, could we have the spots at your right and left hand?" He says, "You don't know what you're asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink or to be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized?" And those two metaphors, the cup and the baptism, are vivid and not pleasant. The cup in Scripture refers to the cup of God's wrath. So don't think of drinking the communion cup. This is much more like the parent who catches their 15-year-old sipping from the whiskey bottle and says, "Oh, that's what you want? Finish it." That's the cup we're talking about. And when you think of baptism, don't think of me pouring a little water on a baby's head or jumping into a cool creek at the end of a hot day. For the ancient people of Israel, the water was chaos. The water was death. The idea of being submerged in the water is like, for us, being shot into orbit without a spacesuit. You will not survive out there. Jesus is being really vivid that I came so that I could suffer. I didn't come to get what I want. I came to give. And he's clear that this suffering has a purpose, a powerful and specific purpose. Now, at the very least, that purpose is solidarity. Right? He says, "I'm going to go through this," and then he says to James and John, "and then you are." And when you go through whatever suffering you go through, whatever you have gone through, whatever you will go through, it is great comfort and consolation to know that Jesus is with you in that, that he knows what suffering is. Victor Austin, the minister who baptized me when I was a baby, recently lost his wife. She had been wrestling with a debilitating brain disease for 20 years. She died when she was 54 years old. And as he wrote about it, he said, "There is no darkness into which a human being can descend where Jesus Christ has not already been." And I'm not telling you that it is easy taking care of a wife whose brain is falling apart for 2 decades and then losing her. But I'm telling you that Jesus was with me every step of the way. And Jesus suffers at least to give us that comfort, to know that in the depths of our suffering, we are not alone. But he suffers for an even higher purpose than that, more than that solidarity and that companionship in the midst of suffering. He says it clear as day in verse 45. "For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many." To serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. A ransom, we think of kidnapping, and that's close. That's on the right track. A ransom was what you paid to buy somebody out of slavery. So a king would go to war, and he would lose the battle, and many of his soldiers who were captured would be enslaved. And in honor of their faithful commitment, he might buy them back out of slavery. He would have to pay for their freedom. And that's what Jesus, as our King, does for us. With his own life, he ransoms us and sets us free. The way that Isaiah said it 700 years before Jesus lived, is he said, all we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned every one of us to our own way. We've all gone off trying to get what we want, trying to get as much power so that we can lead as the world has led us. And then Isaiah says, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. Jesus has set us free from the slavery we have chosen for ourselves. The slavery of trying and trying and trying and trying to get things that even if we get them, will not satisfy us. And Jesus comes not to get for himself, but to give himself, that we might be set free from that kind of leading, from that kind of pursuit of power. And we might be set free to follow him instead. Because as Jesus has led us by giving himself, so we lead. Not by getting, but by giving ourselves, by serving. That's what 43 and 44 are about. Right? Jesus has said, look, this is how the Gentiles do it. This is the way that the world leads. But it shall not be so among you. And in the Greek, that's actually present tense. But it is not so among you. But whoever would be great among you must be your servant. And whoever would be first among you must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. Now, please, the most important word in those three verses is the for at the beginning of verse 45. Don't read them in the order they're written, read them in their logical order. If you read it in the order it's written, it's you guys need to serve one another and be slaves to one another. And once that happens, Jesus will give his life as a ransom for you. Do not read it that way. That's not the way it's written. The for means because. We serve one another. We give ourselves to one another because Jesus has already given his life as a ransom for us. As we already have been led, so we lead. And how do we lead? We lead in the same way, by serving and giving. We see this really vividly for James and John. Jesus says, look, you're right. You are going to drink the cup that I drink, and you are going to be baptized with the baptism with which I will be baptized. You are going to suffer. In James and John's cases, powerfully and literally. James was martyred. John, they tried to martyr him. They boiled him alive. It didn't work. And they left him in exile on an island to live out his days. This is not going to be easy. It is hard to serve and to give. It is hard to make yourself a servant and a slave. Now, it's hard, but it doesn't have to be as spectacular as it was with James and John. It can be very, very ordinary. The simple, everyday act of putting the person in front of you ahead of yourself, of serving them rather than trying to get something from them. That's how we lead. And Jesus isn't pulling punches. It will be difficult. It's difficult to serve a spouse or a friend who still has an unapologetic getting mentality when it comes to power and seems to just take advantage of your service and your generosity. It's hard to serve and give to an elderly parent who is used to telling you what to do because that's what they've been doing their whole life and is still telling you what to do even as you take care of them hour after hour, day after day, month after month. This is really difficult. And it is only possible if we are being led by the one who came not to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many. Now, don't get me wrong. You can do a lot of good acts of service and generosity with or without Jesus. We should never be surprised to see people who have no relationship with Jesus serving or being generous. That absolutely happens. But the only way you can sustain this and the only way it can be about service and giving in an ongoing way is if you are already being served and you've already been given to. And the only person who's able to do that to the degree you need it is Jesus. I have been on several group backpacking trips. And every group backpacking trip starts the same. You have 10 people and they all have 45 pounds on their back. And 2 miles into every group backpacking trip, you stop and you change what people are carrying. Because some people can hike as fast with 60 pounds as other people can hike with 30 pounds. And that is an act of generosity and service on the part of the person who's carrying 60 pounds. It absolutely is. But it's done in order to get something, in order to get everybody through the trip, in order to not have to sit around waiting constantly, in order to seem like an all-around good person. You can do the good thing in order to get. And then at some point, you will need to do the bad thing in order to get. And you will do the bad thing. Jesus didn't just say, we are going to live, and in the midst of living, there will be some service and some generosity. Jesus said, serving and giving are the point. It's not just, if anyone would lead you, then they must serve, but they must become a servant. And if anyone would be first among you, they must become a slave to everyone else. And he didn't just say, the Son of Man came and he's going to do some serving. He said, the Son of Man came to serve. That is the purpose. There's nothing after it. There's nothing, and then I get. If that's the approach, then you're not actually serving. You're just doing a cleverer form of getting. Jesus uses power to give himself. That's the point of the power. That's all it's for. And as we have been led by Jesus, so we lead by using power to serve and give. That's the point. And there's nothing on the other end of that except the inherent joy of following in the footsteps of Jesus. The inherent wonder and glory of leading and living like the Son of Man who came not to be served but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. That's what we were made for, not to do that in order to get into heaven, not to do that in order to get a seat at his right or his left hand, not to do that in order to get a reputation in the church for being a really servant-hearted and wonderful and humble person. The service and the generosity is the point. It was the point for Jesus, and Jesus is the point for us. He is the leader. He is the model. He is the reward. And as he has led us by giving himself for us, so we lead.